Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and I'd like to welcome you to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a show that is impotent to disprove its own premise. Item one. Once again, no voiceover intro. But here's the thing. I'm going to have to rewrite the script. You see, I had a great script. It was a script that I wrote, and then I brought on a professional writer, actually an expert in marketing and communications, and he rewrote the script. And so we were all ready to record. We had our music. We had a wide selection of voiceover artists, some who were dying for the job, some who were indifferent, but we have plenty of those guys and girls. And so it was just a matter of choosing, but then something happened, and it just stopped everything. Stop, completely. Stop. Because a certain comedy coach told me that in the voiceover intro, I need to explain to listeners why you are listening and why it even matters. Now, that is a huge task because I don't have the slightest idea why you're listening or why it matters. And so clearly I'm going to have to make something up. And what a burden. Item two, Ann Curry. You probably thought by now I would be through. I'd be finished. I had ripped on Ann Curry all that I possibly could. But I just feel a need. And if you're listening for the first time, the reason I open the show with a diatribe against Ann Curry is because for years, for absolutely years, I have been annoyed with her and her interview style, the way she does all the talking. She asks the question and answers it and hardly lets her guest say a thing. She presupposes an answer. She makes all sorts of assumptions, and imagine my horror when I had my own radio show and learned that I was five times more annoying than Ann Curry. It's just a terrible thing. Now, people are aware, and how could they not be, given I start every show with complaints about Ann Curry, people are aware that I have a little problem with her. And one of our listeners who is just incredibly considerate was a bit worried about what my reaction might be when I found out that Ann Curry recently was a cover girl on a magazine. Now, it's not the first time it's happened, certainly. And this particular magazine wasn't particularly glamorous. But she was the cover girl nonetheless, and I think the listener was very concerned about me and my emotional health, that I would hear about this and be upset. But little did he know, it gave me great hope, because I think just my association with Ann Curry, the fact that I badmouth her on every single episode of Women Are Not Funny Radio, I think that association might be useful in helping me land a cover girl assignment for a magazine. And I got to thinking about it. You know, I did a little modeling back when I was in high school, and that, of course, was just a short time ago. But what I came to realize recently after this listener contacted me about the Ann Curry cover is that there is a huge opportunity to be a cover girl on a doll magazine. You know, there are any number of doll magazines, and it's just amazing. And so that is my next quest, and I hope I'll be reporting something soon about my success at that. Okay, item number three, last week's show. Well, on last week's show, I told you about my new comedy coach. And I complained about him a good bit. The thing is, I wanted you to hear my complaints and take sides and defend me. And I want to wanted you to say, what does he know, Kay? Because, see, this is it. If you weren't listening to last week's show, and you probably weren't, although millions were, certainly, what my comedy coach told me was that I am remarkably unfunny. And he essentially said that there is no hope for me. He said that certainly any improvement, you know, since I'm remarkably unfunny, that I could improve just, I could, if I came up with anything funny, that would be an improvement. If I could make him smile on occasion, that would be an improvement. So clearly there's opportunity here, but he told me very specifically to never talk about last week's show. He said, you don't care. You were either here, you weren't here. Regardless, you don't care. This is this week, that was last week. And I understand his point, but just the fact that I'm talking about him and I'm talking about last week's show is a lot of evidence that I am a terrible student and I don't even pay attention to advice that I have paid for. So, I don't know. I thought probably hordes of people would be contacting me saying, Kay, obviously you hired a miserable excuse for a comedy coach. You clearly are hysterically funny. Your comedy coach is incompetent as a comedy coach. And that didn't happen. So anyway, but at least you know my pain. And you see, I thought in my ignorance of comedy, I thought it was pretty funny to hire a comedy coach. I thought that in and of itself was humorous. I also thought it was very funny to hire a male comedy coach for to help me with a show called Women Are Not Funny. But, you know, apparently not. Okay, item four. And this time I'm not talking about last week's show. I'm talking about the show the week before when I announced the very exciting Win a Date with Hugh Jackman contest. Now, here, once again, listener reaction was not exactly as I thought it might be. I thought I would be overwhelmed with thank yous from my listeners. Thank yous saying, Kay, oh, this is the most wonderful thing. This is probably my best shot to win a date with Hugh Jackman. And I want to thank you and Women Are Not Funny Radio for providing just such a thing. Well, I didn't hear from anyone. I heard from one man who apparently, when he heard about the contest, looked in the mirror and noticed that he had a resemblance to Hugh Jackman. And given that Hugh Jackman is such a handsome man, this listener started carrying his own picture in his wallet. So that was definitely a reaction, but just not the one I expected. I just expected a whole lot of excitement. But I think what is going on, I think those of you who are planning on entering the Win a Date with Hugh Jackman contest, you're too excited to talk about it. And I also think you probably want to keep it to yourself. You don't want others to know because they would enter and you don't want there to be a lot of entrants. So I understand, and that's fine. Another thing that we failed to talk about last week, and I got a little bit of pain for this because I failed to mention it. So this would really go against my comedy coach's claim that you do not want to hear about the week before. I did not mention the Accomplish Something Initiative. The Accomplish Something Initiative is something that Women Are Not Funny Radio brought about because we understand since we are going to be here for an hour, we might as well accomplish something. So the Accomplish Something Initiative is a desire by Women Are Not Funny Radio to, during the show, that we think about stuff, that we talk about stuff and that we do stuff. Now, at the time we established the Accomplish Something Initiative, we named it in honor of our featured guest, Martha Giffen. And I think that was a lovely thing to do, and I'm sure she was quite flattered by it, I hope so, because I'm taking it away. You know, it was in her honor for 2 or 3 weeks, but that's enough. That should be enough for anyone. And so now I'm going to change things, and I'm going to make it in honor of an upcoming guest, and that is Dangerous Lee. And Dangerous Lee is a star in radio. For over 2 years, she was the co-host of Dr. Blogstein's Happy Hour, Radio Happy Hour on Blog Talk Radio, and it is the number one comedy radio show on that website. And she did a weekly show with Dr. Blogstein where she was his co-host, and she knows a lot about comedy radio. But here's what happened to Dangerous Lee. One night during the show, a guest did not show up, and so she got a little bored and started emptying her dishwasher. This completely put off the host, David Brown, whose radio name is Dr. Blogstein, and he essentially fired her. Dangerous Lee would say she quit. I think it's kind of in between. He gave her a hard time for unloading the dishwasher. She got mad and she resigned. Now, don't you think Dangerous Lee, a woman who could be the co-host of a radio show while unloading her dishwasher, don't you think she should be the poster child, the icon for the Accomplish Something Initiative? I mean, to me, that is the most impressive piece of work, and it almost makes me want to unload my dishwasher at this very moment, but not, not quite. I wouldn't go that far. Okay, one more thing about last week's show. We talked about my new comedy CD, KK's Divorce. You can find it at kksdivorce.com. So it's KK's without the apostrophe because URLs do not permit it, kksdivorce.com. Please go there, look at it, and see what you think. I think you're probably wondering, how is it doing? You know, you launched a comedy CD. You threw it out there to the universe. How are sales? How is it coming along? Well, here is the update I would give you. I think this is kind of a showbiz way to say it, which is terribly appropriate. KK's Divorce is struggling to find its audience. Okay. Well, someone who does not ever have to struggle to find an audience because she is extremely popular in several venues is our guest today, and that's Sandy McKenna, who is on Twitter as @McMedia. And I am so happy she's here today because several reasons. I like her enormously. She's just a lot of fun to talk to. And also, I think I'll have the opportunity as part of the Accomplish Something Initiative to improve her. You know, that's what I'm hoping. Anyway, Sandy, I'm so glad you're here.
Hey, Kay. Nice to be here. How are you?
Well, you tell me. You've been listening to me go on for a while. How do you think I am?
Oh, my God, you sound terrible.
Do I really?
Like,
do I
no, sound... my God, I gotta help this girl.
Oh, well, see, that's the thing, Sandy. We can help each other. We can truly help each other. And I think if we do that, it will be true to the Dangerous Lee Accomplish Something Initiative.
Good.
So, but first there's something I have to do. And I really don't want you to take offense, okay, because I ask all my guests this, and I was forced to do it because I became aware some weeks ago that I was really being used. And I don't mind being used as long as I know I'm being used. So I have to ask you, are you using your appearance on this show as a stepping stone to something or something better?
Oh, you caught me. oh, yeah. Yeah, everything's a stepping stone. I'm sorry. Women are not funny. It's just one of them. But the one thing about me is I'm very truthful.
Mm-hmm. You are truthful. And at least knowing your position on this, I can go forward with that knowledge. But here's one more question I have. Do you consider your appearance on Women Are Not Funny as an audition to try to take over the show?
No, I think you can rest assured that your spot is safe.
Well, maybe safe from you, but, others are listening, and they do have a say. But you seem, one of the things that I mention in the show notes is that you and I are both media moguls.
That's what you say. I was wondering, I understand how you're a media mogul. I just wasn't sure how I was a media mogul.
See, and I would like to say that it is charming to be coy. But since I am not coy, I have a hard time saying that. But you're very, very, very modest. Would you agree with that?
Probably more like self-loathing.
Self-loathing. Well, that's... I'm just really curious about that. I mean, one of the things that I did this week, and I felt just awful about it, but I was on Twitter, and you were tweeting to the Rachel Ray Show to thank them for a recipe or something like that, and I just took the opportunity to tell the Rachel Ray Show that you were a media mogul. And, of course, you found that humiliating because you are, you just won't own up to it. And I just thought the Rachel Ray Show might need to know. I did. Because you are, among other things, you are the producer of a hilarious ongoing series of videos called The Midlife Road Trip. Now, that's the truth, isn't it?
That is the truth.
That is the truth. And not only are you the producer in a strange sort of real-world non-juxtaposition, you also play the producer on the show.
That kind of came about as an accident. It wasn't intentional. It was never my goal to... like I said, humiliate myself in high def. I mean, bad enough before high def, but now it's really horrendous. And that's what I said. The only way that I would ever be featured on any of the episodes is if they're funny. If they're not funny, there is no way in the world I will humiliate myself and put my fat out there and my every flaw that I have, and there are many, for everybody to see unless they're laughing. So... hopefully, so far, we've been able to achieve that.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you this, and I don't expect you to listen. I don't expect you to pay attention. I do not expect you to agree. I do not expect you to fully appreciate the truth of it or how much I mean it. But you look good in those. You look great.
Well, that's very, very kind of you to say. Very generous, actually.
One of the things I would also, suggest as a possibility, surely as the producer, you have some sort of editorial control, correct?
Yes.
I mean, I'm saying it's no accident you look good. You surely wouldn't, even if it's funny as heck, you certainly wouldn't let any shots in that you don't, that you're not in love with, would you?
Well, actually, I could be overridden, yes. And there are quite a few shots and quite a few photographs out there where I don't think they're exactly flattering, but if it's, it's we're an ensemble. So, you take one for the team.
Well, I like that attitude, even if I can't duplicate it. I mean, I really like that attitude. I do know that, you know, my own experience recently as executive producer of KK's Divorce, and it's kind of funny because it was like a sandwich where I was executive producer and also the writer, and then in between there was Paula Kelly, the producer. And so letting go and letting someone else make decisions, it's not always easy, is it?
No, but Rick Griffin is our editor. Well, we have two editors. Rick Griffin is one, and Ryan Kavanaugh is the other. And they're really great editors, and they really have timing down and all of that. So I think, you know, I appreciate that they're so good at their craft. And
well, I think they really are, and I want to tell everyone once again what we're talking about is Midlife Road Trip. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on their site. There are connections to it, links to it on the Women Are Not Funny radio site. However, I don't want to tell anyone the exact website at this moment, Sandy, because since my comedy coach has convinced me that I'm not funny, people will go there in droves. I mean, they'll just leave us and go and watch Midlife Road Trip. And I want them to do that, but not now, right? I want them to do that.
You know, that's
after
the time you had Midlife Road Trip, we could take a cruise.
You know what? As soon as I said that, I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm telling you.
I frequently do that. I say things that are brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me. But let's talk a little bit about the premise of the Midlife Road Trip.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, you know, I love it. And it's very interesting to me. And so I'm just going to assume that it will be interesting to everyone else, right?
Of course.
Because I pretty much am a comedy barometer, in addition to being, you know, extremely humorous, even though my comedy coach does not believe that I am a comedy barometer, and I know what's funny.
As long as you laugh, that's, you know.
Well, Midlife Road Trip is two people, essentially. I have that right, correct?
Well,
a man and a woman.
It actually started out as the two of them, and that they were going to host this this show. It was going to be a travel show. And we all met on Twitter. That's, I think, what's really the unique thing about our story here is that 9 months ago, we all just were chit-chatting on Twitter, and we started brainstorming. And we got together, and we filmed an episode. And we felt we were onto something. And then it evolved where now it's kind of three friends that where we go around and we are knocking things off our bucket list. And I was behind the scenes, but somehow, you know, I don't know whether it was, you know, secretly trying to, I don't know what it was. Somehow I ended up on camera and kind of, you know, filling in the blanks. And our whole objective is to really peek behind the avatar, you know, pull the curtain back on life and, you know, in all its unflatteringness, so to speak. And we are what we are. And truly, a lot of it, we don't even try to be funny. It's just, you know, it's just how ridiculous we are.
Well, the thing that amazes me the most, and you are, when I said there are two people, you are a very important character in this little drama, comedy drama, if you will. But there is a woman and a man, and they are playing.
Cher Bailey.
Yes,
and they're hilarious.
They are hilarious, but they are playing a married couple.
No,
they are not playing a married couple.
No, you have in our very first episode, they were going to play a married couple, And they're both married to other people, as am I.
Right.
And we wanted to be true to ourselves, and they just found it just didn't work that way because we're all like brother and sister. And, you know, we all pack up and we leave our families behind and we get together, and it was too fake. And we just don't want to be fake. We want to be who we are. So now it truly is the truth. It is truly that we just pack up, we leave our families and our messes at home behind, and we go to different cities. And we experience, now we have ambassadors in every city we go to, and they set up things for us to do in the city when we get there. And we just get to do all these things that we've always wanted to do on our bucket lists and fun things. And it's just the cameras rolling and just everything is organic. And that's really how it evolved. But
well,
you're right, it was going to be where they were.
Well, the episode that you're describing as fake, to me, was very convincing. To me, they were very convincing playing a married couple, and so I was shocked when I learned they weren't married. But I hadn't really noticed, you know, I don't think in your subsequent episodes you have announced, now we're not married, we're true to who we are, but, you know,
we took that episode off. We took the first episode off, and we edited out any of the part where it sounded like they were married. But even to this day, people still think they're married.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you thought it was fakey, but to someone watching it, to me anyway, it seemed very real, and so I was shocked to find out that they weren't married.
Well, they'll be happy to know that, and I'm sure their spouses will be delighted.
Well, it didn't strike me as a great love affair. Let me say that. It didn't strike me that they were married. But that episode, though, is, I believe, the episode where you also, the one, you know, I'm just struck by it, and you know because I go on and on about it, using the cookie as a comedic device. And that was really the drama for me of the episode, is just wondering if you were ever going to eat the cookie. You know, and I know Paula Kelly, watching it, had exactly the same direction or feeling about it, because it was like that cookie had a life of its own. It had a story arc, and just fabulous. Just fabulous.
It's funny. One of the things that has derived of this in our recent trip to Phoenix was I sat down with the tea sommelier at the Ritz-Carlton, and he and I talked about becoming a sommelier and what it took. And because of my passion, and it was an early conversation with you that made me decide that, you know, I really need to, you know, pursue my passion for cookies. And he ordained me the first really official cookie sommelier in the world. And so now I'm actually starting a website. It's called Cookie Sommelier, and I'm going to have the best cookie recipes from everywhere.
Well, that is really fabulous. You know, that sounds like a career path that a person could really sink their teeth into, you know.
That indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I'm embarrassed of that. That was corny. That was just totally corny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. One of the things, you know, you kind of got the idea from listening to my opening, is that part of the fun for me of Women Are Not Funny Radio is to annoy myself in hopes that I will annoy others. And one of the things that annoys me so much on internet radio is when people talk about how they met each other. You know, I just find that boring. If that truly is, who cares? Nobody else could possibly care other than the two people having the conversation. In fact, it's possible that right now we could have a conversation about it and only one of us would care, me. You might not even care to remember how we met. And so, but anyway, I thought by talking about it in advance, people could be forewarned and they could go get a cup of coffee while we talk about that for a few moments. Because if you recall, we were introduced by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been around too much, by the way, and that's at Rick London.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
He said, I think you need to meet McMedia. But
you know who told me to meet you, though? was aging backwards.
Well, possibly, I don't know, because this is what happened as I recall it. We may have to have a kind of a fist fight about this because we have different recollections.
Mm-hmm.
And because my recollection is Rick London said, "You McMedia is someone you want to know." And I came back with, "Look, I already follow McMedia, and she doesn't pay any attention to me at all." And so then I got a tweet from you where you apologize for whatever I was putting out there, you know, and said it was very friendly and sorry that you feel that way and blah, 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 blah. And then
okay.
I had to tweet you back and go, "Oh, whoops, sorry, I was thinking about McPedia, not because McPedia is so."
I do remember that, kind of, but I remember Aging Backwards telling me about you.
Uh-huh. Well, probably what happened was that Aging Backwards, who is our mutual friend Jackie Silver, told you about me, and you just paid no attention whatsoever.
Oh, and you know what? You were talking about me all over Twitter behind my back.
Not at all. I mean, I was very open about it. I said, "No, I already follow her, and she ignores me." But I wasn't even the person I was talking about is actually a roller derby star. And the
Ooh.
Reason I follow her, even though she totally ignores me, is because this is my theory, Sandy, and you tell me what you think. I think the fact that I follow a big roller derby star out in L.A., and I don't even know her team. I'm not really into the roller derby, but, you know, I am into trying to be cool. I think it makes me cool to follow a roller derby star.
Okay.
Well, apparently not with you. Apparently not with you. But she was ignoring me, and you kind of, since your name, McMedia, McPedia, you know, I'm not accusing you of having a, you know, kind of a derivative name. I don't know who got their name first. But how did you choose your Twitter handle?
Because my last name is McKenna, and because I used to be a publicist. So media, McMedia. And I wanted something short because I usually have a lot of things to say. So I didn't want a lot of letters in there. I wanted to maximize my 140.
So it was totally strategic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of. Yeah, it really wasn't an accident.
At the time, Rick London told me that you were working on a book. Is that so?
A children's book. Yes. I've co-written a children's book with Patricia Rossi.
Oh, well, lovely. And so is it available? Is it about to be published? What's the story on it?
It's out there, but it hasn't been published yet. And it's I don't know if it ever will be. But, we worked on a book. It's called Behaving Gladly. This is so funny. She's an etiquette expert. And, she does all things well and with good manners. And then there's me. And I said it was really funny how we, she collaborated with me on this book because I don't think I'm known for my good manners. And not that I'm known for bad manners.
I don't believe that. In fact, I am here to say you are someone who actually thanked me for a thank you. So I think you have very good manners.
Well, I thought that was really sweet. I mean, I think you're a very, you come across sometimes intentionally that you are very flippant, but you truly are a very kind person with a heart of gold.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, once again, that is something that would be nice on a billboard.
Mm-hmm.
Kay Ballard, you are truly kind with a heart of gold.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And see, the fact that you are good at coming out with these sorts of billboard moments, if you will, probably is related to the fact that you were a publicist. For as your career path, you have worked in that field. Do you think
mm-hmm.
that's? Let me share this with you. I had intended to anyway, but in the hour or so before the show started, I had a conversation with a salesperson for a large company that helps you get your product, message, whatever, in front of media. And so what we were talking about is a package of services that they would put together for KK's divorce. And so we were talking about it and what the options were, and it was kind of a weird conversation. The way it ended was he told me I was the most confusing person he had ever met, and he was completely confused. That is a true story. Yes?
You can be a little confusing.
Yeah, I think I am. So one of the things that we were talking about is, and I think this is one of the reasons he was confused, I said, okay, so if I get publicity, to what end? Because, Sandy, I'm not in the divorce business. You know, I'm just a woman who got a divorce. I'm not in the divorce industry. I don't want to be in the divorce industry, right? So if I were to be on radio shows to promote KK's divorce, you do understand what I'm doing right now. I'm trying to get free advice from you. I understand that you're a consultant in the publicity field, and
I'm happy to give away my stuff for free.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. So, you know, I said, since I'm not in the divorce industry, if they brought me on when they were featuring divorce, because he's sitting there, I mean, we both have the same idea. There are divorces. There are lots of them. This is not a rare thing. Divorces, there are plenty of divorces to go around, you know. So it is a topic of great discussion and also great familiarity with many people who, you know, many people have had a divorce, right? So he said, you know, you could be on shows when they are doing segments about divorce. And, you know, people could ask you questions. And I said, well, I can give answers because I'm bossy. You know, that's the end, because I think I know everything. But I know nothing. All I know about divorce is my own divorce. I said, really, probably more of the story is this is a wacky thing to do when you get a divorce. Do a comedy CD about your divorce to put on iTunes. That's probably the story. And he said, yeah, that probably is the story. And he said, morning talk radio, they're just looking for wacky guests. And I said, yeah, I know, but, you know, so I want publicity, then I'm wacky? You see the problem, don't you, Sandy?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you've got to have a hook. And I guess he was thinking wacky is the hook.
Wacky is the hook. And so if the hook is successful, if I pay money in order for them to put that hook out there and it is successful, what have I achieved? I have achieved being known for being wacky.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. See the problem.
And do you think your radio show clarifies you? Is painting the clear picture of the K that you want to be?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that it is useful in this respect. It is giving me experience as a punching bag, you know, because I have to take questions. I have to take questions like that. I have to pay my comedy coach to tell me I'm not funny, you know. So it does have that, you know, real benefit to me. But you can see my problem with the publicity. I don't really know where it leads to. And, you know, I definitely would like a wider audience for that little CD, but it's not, and we think it gives our company great exposure. On the other hand, the kind of exposure it gives us, we're not in the divorce business. And we hope that we are, you know, we're pretty wacky, but we hope that we are known for things other than wacky, too.
I don't know that. I think that was probably a very poor choice of words for him to use.
Do.
You know, I wouldn't actually go after clients by, you know, putting them in a wacky category.
putting them in a wacky category. Well, but you know, he was kind of very upfront. So, and I was the one who suggested, you know, I don't think it's really to our benefit for that little CD to be in the divorce category. But anyway, so what did you think about the fact that I hired a comedy coach?
I think that it's not a bad idea.
You know, part of the reason that I hired a comedy coach, as I stated earlier, was just to show off. You know, because when you hire a comedy coach, then you can tell people you hired a comedy coach, right? And it's kind of a show-offy thing, don't you think?
It could be. It could be perceived that way, or it could be perceived that you're a perfectionist and you want to hone your craft.
Mm-hmm. Or that you're wacky. You know, could
or
be
that
you're just...
that you...
You just are, the, you know, weird. Okay, so here's what I want to know, though. Have you ever hired a comedy coach?
No. Can't you tell? I mean,
the fact is that I've stated over and over again. See, this is one difference between the two of us. I'm sure there are many, but this is one. When you are self-deprecating, you are seriously, honestly that way. I mean, you when you say things like that, you just believe them. When I'm self-deprecating, I am just being, you know, disingenuous and, trying to be charming because I actually think I'm great. And so that's the, you know, that's the difference between us.
Well, there's a lot to be said for self-confidence.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so how did you get funny, though, if you didn't hire a comedy coach? Because even though you don't believe it, you are definitely funny.
I have a very funny family. My family, my father was hilarious growing up. I had friends when they grew up that you would go to their house for dinner and you would sit at the table and everybody had to, you know, be all shishi-foo-foo and quiet and there was never really much of a discussion and kids were not, in our house, I mean, you know, there were no holes barred. I mean, there were just, you know, everybody was laughing and everything was very funny. And to this day, I laugh at everything. I mean, there was nothing. My father this year was terribly, terribly ill. And he was in the hospital. And, I mean, people would have thought we were, you know, a little wacky, I guess. We laughed at everything. And that's the way I get through life. I laugh at everything. And if you can't, you know, if you can't find something funny, then, I just would rather laugh. That's my form of exercise.
Yeah, I agree with you. And actually, that is one of the reasons that we started this show in the first place. It's to explore the ways that women use humor in their lives and in their careers, and even, I would posit, as a leadership tool. And so what we were hoping to do, and we haven't given up on it, we're still finding our way, Sandy, but we're hoping to have something that at some point becomes a marriage of a view, you know, of funny women and of kind of a look that wouldn't be, that would be honored by academia, if you will, because it is an area of study that just, there's not enough. There's not enough known. And people are interested in this. And we talked about having conferences where there would be on stage women comedians as well as women academicians. And but my guess is, since you are naturally funny, before you became a media mogul, when you were a publicist, before you moved to Florida, you were funny in your job. Am I right?
I always liked to laugh. I mean, always. From a little kid, you know, my brother used to make sounds and noises and voices, and I used to hear them. And, we just had a good time. And that's the way, I mean, I just think if you can either walk through life miserable or you can walk through life happy. And no matter what happens in life, there's going to be bad stuff happening. And I just as soon laugh at it than cry at it, truthfully. I mean, it's not that I don't ever have a bad moment or a bad day, but you know what? Snap out of it. And I would just rather laugh. And I, you know, I'll I think there is something to be said for being happy. And when you're a publicist, people pay you to be pleasant. They don't pay you to be miserable. So no matter how somebody is treating you or no matter how difficult a client was, I mean, I learned I had to be happy. And I had to put, you know, you put on your game face. It was really, really good practice for me because, you know, being a publicist is really an abusive profession.
Oh, is it? Is it? Is that true?
Oh, gosh, yeah. You get yelled at from everybody. But, you know, so you learn to...
Because people never get... They never feel like they get enough publicity?
Oh, well, people never get enough. It's thankless. I mean, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good perks to it and stuff. But, I mean, you know, after you do it for a number of years, you're just like, okay, enough already. And, no, you know, because a lot of times people think they are more talented than they actually are. And that could be a very, you know...
Well, I mean, all of us who have something to put out there, we want a lot of attention for it. Don't you think just the very nature of the people that you're publicizing, they are people who are seeking attention either for themselves or their idea, their point of view, their creation. And so it's really, it's very... empathic work, I suppose, I would say, in that respect, because you are helping people, you're trying to understand people and help them get the thing they need the most, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, too, what happened in, you know, me, and I saw it coming, was newspapers were shrinking. There was more pay-for-play on television. It was much more difficult to get somebody placed. Add that in, you know, less talent, and it just, you know, it was a sticky wicket. And I just decided, you know, I want to do something different. And you know, in conversation on Twitter, you know, just things changed.
Well, absolutely. And the thing I would say, and you cannot deny it, you can deny it, but I won't even pay attention. The camera loves you. And that was a comment I made to you the first time I saw a video of you, and it was not a midlife road trip. It was where you were doing a news segment on products for
travel thing.
Travel products. And I said, Sandy, the camera loves you, and I think that is true. And so you've really found your natural place, and the fact that you have this background in publicity can only help you as you continue down the path of being both a media mogul and an on-camera star. But
that happened by accident too, going on and doing television segments, because I never ever thought of it. In all the years that I worked in television and got people on television and I would write and do all these things, I never had a desire, nor did I feel I was you know, capable of doing it. And then an opportunity came up and somebody asked me to go on and speak on behalf of something or talk about something, or I don't even remember what it was. And it was, that was the defining moment. And I said to myself, you've taught this to people for years, and they would get, you know, stage fright or freak out, and you would be like, just do it. And I thought, was I a phony all these years that I was telling everybody they could do it, and then now somebody wants me to do it, and I'm thinking I can't do it? So I just said to myself, oh, just snap out of it, go ahead and do it. Who was it? Richard Branson. He says he has it's kind of that, screw it, just do it, and whatever happens will happen. And I see he's made a, you know, pretty big success of his life, so...
Yeah, he screw it, just do it about 24/7, I think is the way that he did it. He puts a lot of publicity to his luxurious lifestyle and his opportunities to relax, but that man is really a go-getter, you know, that's clear. Could you get me a date with him?
You know what? I say nothing's impossible. You just have to go out there and you have to, you know, you just have to go
there
out
there.
There you go. You'll catch his eye.
I agree. Now, you, of course, though, you not only left the career of publicity, you moved to Florida.
Yes.
How long have you been there?
How long have you been? A lot of years now. And
so essentially you've lived there long enough that you have to claim responsibility for it, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
I would say yes.
Because
I'm a
see,
resident.
You know, people always talk well about Florida, but I actually think it's the other side of hell.
At times it could be, yes.
Well, every time I've been there, it is, and I've been there a lot, Sandy, just a whole lot. And, you know, I mean, I have sad stories to tell. It has a reputation for great weather. Ha! You couldn't prove it by me.
Well, it's an absolutely gorgeous day today.
Mm. You know what? I believe you, and it probably has to do with the fact that I'm not there, you know?
That could be.
I don't know. If I were there, there would probably be a monsoon.
Well, you never know. I mean, we went to Phoenix a couple weeks ago. They tell me it rained 6 days in an entire year in Phoenix. It rained 4 that we were there. So, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, but, I mean, I have experienced every kind of bad weather in Florida. The state that is so well known for great weather.
Well, and we're also known for tornadoes and hurricanes and shark bites and.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know that Alligator Alley. I mean, there are because
that is true. Yeah, it was the same. You know,
every time I've been in Florida, what have I been in? Rental car. I've always been in a rental car, and so I have had just horrible, scary driving experiences all over the state, bad weather conditions, and always in a rental car, always, which, you know, nothing wrong with that. It just means it's a car I'm not particularly familiar with. So driving down the highway.
Let me know when you're coming to the state, and we'll know to stay in.
Well, see, that's one of those things. Talk about stay in. You know, when you're on a stretch of road, and for listeners who have never had the privilege of driving down Alligator Alley, it's pretty much a barren highway that goes across the state at its widest point. And everyone knows that there are so many alligators there alongside the road. They're just there waiting to eat you. And or at least bite you and cause you hurt and pain. And so you wouldn't dare get out of your car, right? Because you would be subject to an alligator attack anywhere along that highway, right? And so driving along it, well, yeah, and it's really, I suppose you could get through it if you were, you know, if you were strong, you could maybe wrestle an alligator, beat him up, something. But you would have some hurt if you encountered an alligator. And apparently they're all up in, why would they call it Alligator Alley without, if this weren't true? There are alligators everywhere. And so even if you're driving a rental car that you're unfamiliar with and it is a monsoon and, you know, just huge buckets of water are being poured on top of you as you go down the road, you can't even pull over to just kind of relax and breathe deeply because the alligators probably even know how to get into your car. That was my thought.
Yeah. Are you driving a convertible?
No. Are you saying I'm giving them too much credit? For,
well,
you know.
I think there's a little paranoia going on.
Well, okay. I will confess to that. But I just want you to know that, you know, one of the awful things you have in Florida, of course, is Disney World. And I know that people love it. You know, I know that just for me to say I don't, it will bring down a lot of wrath. And I'm sure it's very well deserved. But
yeah.
But you know, I'm not so big on Disney World, and I have been there for conferences, and then I did the thing when my daughter, you know, in this country, you absolutely are, if you are a parent and you do not take your child to Disney World, everyone, you know, talk about billboards, probably billboards spring up that pronounce you a bad parent. you really have no choice in the matter. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, on the parenting list, you must go to Disney World or Disneyland at some point for a child.
It's a requirement. It's totally
a requirement. I love
it.
I mean, I think once a year you go do something like that, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even go on rides. I don't like rides, but I just...
There is something terribly wrong with you. Because one of the things about it, I mean, I get it. So you don't go on rides. You go there because you want to see plastic Benjamin Franklin and plastic Mark Twain have a conversation. That's why you go there, right?
No, I go because I love to see the kids' faces, and I don't know, and I just think it's such a genius thing. I mean, how Walt Disney had this vision, and he brought all these things to life. I mean, I love that. My saying is, you know, I always think dream big, and nobody, you know, dreamed bigger than Walt Disney. And I think if he can come up with something like that, you know, my little midlife road trip can turn into something. So for me, it's the fantasy. It's the, you know, the thought that, you know what, you can really turn something in. So you gotta get a positive attitude there, girl.
I think your speech is very inspiring. And I also think that you're probably the kind of person that enjoys seeing those little children's faces as they have lunch at Fake China or at, you know, at Disney World, or maybe it's Epcot Center. You can have lunch at Fake Mexico.
I love all that stuff. I just think it's, you know, there's a lot of people who will never get to another country. And that is the closest thing they'll ever get to. You know?
That is funny. And there are also a lot of people who will never actually see an actual conversation between Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin. So
that
seeing two
most
gigantic... exactly. So it's a great substitute to see two gigantic fake plastic statues of them, you know, roll out on stage and start talking to each other. And, you know, and I... it is so... I'm being mean, aren't I?
Yes, you are. Yes. What is a fantasy? I live in
so
a fantasy.
So are you prepared to take back all the wonderful things you said about me?
Not at all. You are a wolf in
sheep's
clothing, or a sheep in wolf's clothing, or one of the other.
Yeah. Once again, I've confused somebody enormously. But here's something I'm not confused about, and that is, you are funny, and Midlife Road Trip is funny, and it has a great future, and it is so impressive as a project. It's so exciting as a project that came about accidentally. I know something about that myself, but I do know most of all that you are my friend, and I adore you.
And the feeling is mutual. I thank you so much for calling me up and chatting me up and you know, getting my attention on Twitter, because I really enjoy tweeting with you.
Well, once again, something for the billboard.
Thank you.